Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3, the game streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. We are live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios. Predators with an all-time meltdown last night. I don't want to rehash what happened. It was so bad. But it probably, and I keep saying that word probably, and I'm not saying hopefully, I'm just saying probably, just because I think something's going to happen doesn't mean I want it to happen. But it probably ends any chance they had of winning the series, which is a series they should have won, given the fact that Vancouver has played a backup goalie in three of the four games and will probably continue to play a backup or third-string goalie in Game 5 tomorrow night at Vancouver. So I keep thinking to myself about kind of the big picture of this series, because I do think that in these little games, you know, the little this, the little that, those are small, those are kind of micro moments, right? Like Sisson's hitting the post. That's not really a macro opinion on the future of the Predators or where they're headed as an organization or anything like that, other than Colton Sisson's hit the post. I don't think that's a reason to get rid of Colton Sisson's, that he hit the post. And I don't think that it means that Colton Sisson's is a bad player because he hit the post, but he hit the post. But then there are the big decisions that have to be made. The macro choices. And I keep wondering if Barry Trotz is using this series, which looks like is going to end in favor of Vancouver, as kind of the determining factor as for what he's going to do with his goaltender. Because the truth is, the Nashville Predators have got to decide sooner rather than later what the future of UC Saros is. UC Saros is signed for one more year at $5 million. After this upcoming season, he becomes an unrestricted free agent. The market for Saros after the Connor Hellebuck contract is probably around $8 million a season. UC Saros in this series has allowed 3.1 goals over expectation. So in this series, in which the Predators lost Game 1 by technically two goals, but really one because one was an empty netter, they lost Game 1 by one goal, they lost Game 3 by one goal, and they lost Game 4 in overtime by one goal, UC Saros has allowed over three goals over expectation. He's been terrible. When this playoff series is over, UC Saros' record as a starter will probably be 4-12 as a starter in the playoffs. I believe it was 3-8 going into the series, and so maybe it was 3-7, whatever. Bad. This will have been his third playoff series. It will have been his third playoff series loss. At some point, with the decision looming ahead of the draft, ahead of free agency this year, where teams are trying to build themselves up for next year, doesn't it feel like UC Saros is making the decision for Barry Trotz? And I think the easy thing to do is to compare him to Pekka Rinne, because, well, quite frankly, Pekka Rinne is the gold standard. And with Pekka Rinne, I know, even though it sometimes Pekka wasn't perfect in the playoffs, I didn't think Pekka was very good in 2015, and I don't think he was very good in 2018. But Pekka Rinne stole series for this team. Stole series, not just games, but entire series. The 2017 Chicago series, Rinne. The 2017 Anaheim series, especially after Johansson and Fisher got hurt and they went on the road and they called up a bunch of guys from Milwaukee and they ended up getting a goal from Colin Wilson out of nowhere, and they ended up... That was a Rinne steal. Rinne stole the next game, too. Rinne stole games in the Vancouver series in 2011. He was fabulous in the Anaheim series in 2011, and he was great in the Detroit series in 2012. Pekka Rinne was a bona fide playoff goalie stealer. He won games and won series for you. Saros really hasn't done that. And again, we may not be having this discussion in a different context if the Predators hadn't used the 11th overall pick in 2020 on Yaroslav Askarov. But guess what? They did. And Askarov is ready. Last night, I was looking at the AHL stats of Arturas Seelofs, the goalie you played against and lost to last night, and his AHL numbers were okay. Then I compared them to the AHL numbers of Askarov, and it is not even close. Askarov at 21 is a significantly better goalie than Seelofs at 23. And I'm not saying that that means that Yaroslav Askarov is ready to be a star in the NHL, but he probably is ready for the NHL. So if he's ready for the NHL, and he's bigger than Saros, he's younger than Saros, he's got more talent than Saros, and I know in my heart that I can't win with Saros as my goalie, isn't the decision made for me? And again, I think this is the last data point that Barry Trotz will have before he has to make this decision. Because if you see Saros as the goalie on this team next year, given the fact that they can't trade Forsberg, they can't trade Yossi, and they've got too many veteran guys that will keep you afloat, you're going to be in playoff contention next year. And so if you keep Saros, you can't get to the deadline and then say, well, you know, we're 4 points up on a playoff spot, so let's not trade the goalie, because that's what's going to happen. So you got to make the decision at the draft. You got to make it in late June. If this is the last data point, isn't this kind of the horse leaving the barn? Again, if I'm going to pay a goalie $8 million, I need to win because of the goalie, not, well, there was nothing he could have done on that play, and therefore he... No. And do I think Saros is better than he's played in the series? Sure. But none of it matters if I think you're better than if you can't do it, if you can't perform that way. And in three playoff series, he hasn't won them games. And that's what an $8 million goalie is supposed to do. So, if I was Barry Trotz, and I'm not Barry Trotz, but if I was Barry Trotz, I think I'd be sitting up there right now thinking that next season Yaroslav Askarov is going to be my starting goalie. And the first thing I would do is I'd re-sign Kevin Lankinen, because if, let's say, Askarov's not ready and I have to play Lankinen, I'm not going to win as many games, but guess what? I mean, if I can't win in the playoffs with Saros, how different is it than if I'm playing Kevin Lankinen? What's the line that Branch Rickey told Ralph Kiner back in the day? We finished in last place with you. We can finish in last place without you. I can get beat in the playoffs with you. I get beat in the playoffs without you. And so I know that, again, well, the Besser goal, the second goal last night, that was a little tic-tac-toe. He was wide open on the back door, and he put it in. What Saros supposed to do? And then he made the initial save on Besser, and then Besser collected the rebound, and Besser was able to put it back into the net. And it's okay, you know, what's he supposed to? Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. These really, really good goalies, these Henrik Lundqvist goalies, they steal games. They steal series. Saros doesn't do that. And in a league with a real cap, although Las Vegas is pushing it, in a league with a real cap, with a young goalie at Milwaukee, it makes too much sense that I think UC Saros has proven to us that he's not Pekarinen. And if he's not Pekarinen, then it's time to see next year if the other guy is. Because if you're going to be this team that doesn't have big boy forwards, that doesn't finish third in the draft, to be able to pick up Sidney Crosby, then you're going to have to be able to win on defense with a good goaltender. And you can't win with Saros. It feels like you can't win with Saros. The stats are telling you you can't win with Saros. So why would you re-sign him? And if you're not going to re-sign him, then you need to trade him. And so I think Saros is making that decision for Barry Trotz with his play in this series. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Add that to the list. 615-737-1025. The most disappointing aspect of the Predators series, other than the fact that they completely and totally blew last night, is that given the circumstances, the Predators should win this series. They should have won this series. And they're not going to. Or at least it feels like they're not going to. There are some tough realities that I think we have to accept, and we'll do that next. Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Cole pokes the rebound down around Ryan O'Reilly. Back of the net, right in front, the score! Elias Lindholm wins it after a minute two of overtime, and the Canucks take a 3-1 series lead over Nashville.
Didn't it kind of feel like, and Pete would never do this, but didn't it kind of feel like Pete could have said right there, and that'll do it for the series. We'll see y'all on Tuesday, and we'll see. And the most disheartening part of this series is the fact the Predators should have won this series. Backup goalies. So to me, there are kind of four truths that I feel in particular when it comes to this series. The first one is, this is a series that the Predators should have won. Won it by now? Maybe not. You know, they didn't play well in game two, and even though they won it, they weren't very good. But they probably, it should absolutely, without a question, it should be 2-2. And they pooped their pants, and that's why it's not. But it probably should be 3-1 Predators. And the Predators with Vancouver, with their injuries and goal, like, this should be a slam dunk, you win the series. But you've blown it. And it's really hard to envision this Predators team against that Canucks team winning 3 games in a row, including 2 in that building in Vancouver. So that's the first kind of reality point. That is just, again, it's not what I want to say, but it's what I have to say because it's the truth. The second thing that I've noticed from this series, not that we didn't know this coming into the season, not that we didn't know this at the deadline, not that we didn't. The Predators need better players. When Vancouver can get their best players all on the ice at the same time, Pettersson, Besser, Miller, Hughes, Lindholm, when they can get their best players out there, the Predators absolutely cannot stop them. That is why Vancouver has been a thorn in your side on the power play in this series and with the 6-on-5. Because when they just take out their top skaters and they stick them out there, there is nothing the Predators can do. It doesn't matter which defensive pair is on the ice. It doesn't matter which forwards are out there. But when they put all their guys out there, it is a hang on to your tush. And at no point, I think, is it a hang on to your tush if you're a Canucks fan when Forsberg and O'Reilly and Yossi and those guys are on the ice. I think Vancouver fans are holding on to their tush because they're playing backup goalies that have sub-900 save percentages. So, I mean, again, almost take any team in these playoffs, and they're going to have a better trio or, you know, group of players than Vancouver has, or the same level of good, and that's a problem. So, I mean, I think the Predators are going to probably need some better players. The hope is that some of these guys you've drafted, you know, Kemmel, those kind of guys can eventually be that. But I would say that It'd be nice if that happened sooner rather than later. Kind of the third little nugget is I've had enough with the fourth line. That's our identity line, Jared. That's your AHL line. Those guys are AHL players. Now, look, Kiefer Sherwood has been playing his ass off this series. And that line was a big part of kind of what sparked the turnaround at the beginning of that run. But this is the playoffs. And at the end of the game, the guys he was running out there on the ice, not Bevilier, who I thought was excellent last night, has a ton of playoff experience, not Jason Zucker, who is a playoff pro, but guys like Jankowski and McCarron and Craig Smith and like, you're not going to win games by playing those guys as much. And I understand some of it is that he doesn't want to play Tommy Novak. And that's another problem which needs to be rectified, by the way. But in crunch time, I don't want Mark Jankowski on the ice. I don't want Cole Smith on the ice. Well, Jared, they're tough to play against, and they're right. But they're not talented, and that's the problem. So enough with the fourth line. Play them like a fourth line. I know they'll hit some guys, and you want them to hit Quint Hughes, and they've done it. But, I mean, the best forechecker I think the Predators have had in this series is Bevilier. He's on your second line. And then kind of the third, again, or I should say the fourth kind of reality here. The idea of the Predators winning Game 5 in Vancouver really feels like a stretch. And I have always told people that the NHL playoffs are so funky and weird. And like what happened in last night's game really means nothing 99.9% of the time in Game 5. But I think that Game 5 was so debilitating that I find it hard to believe that the Predators are going to be able to dig themselves out of this. And that it felt like the way they played in overtime was just head down, just, it felt like they were sulking with their play in that overtime. And it's hard for me to imagine that this is not going to be the case tomorrow night. And I will give them credit. I listened to Evangelista with Max after the game was over, and I heard everything that was said in the locker room, and they have the right attitude and the right spirits and everything else. But, again, I find it hard to believe that they're going to win tomorrow night. I will say this, though. I mean, when these guys talk about, hey, man, you know, we just have to win this one game. This is hockey, man. Anything happens in hockey. It does feel like they believe it a little bit, which is important. I remember after the Predators won in overtime against Chicago in Game 3 in 17, and they won. They were down the whole game. Forsberg got a goal in the third period to tie it. And then Kevin Fiala, off of a pass from James Neal, put it in there to win the game in overtime. And the next day, the Blackhawks didn't practice, but they had a media availability. The league requires you to be available every day, which is why the Predators were available at the airport today before they flew out to Vancouver. And so the league requires you to be available every day. And so the Blackhawks had an availability at the Omni. And I think it was Duncan Keith and maybe Brent Seabrook. And they did the media availability. And I watched the video that the Blackhawks posted online in 2017, and those dudes were just almost zombie-like, just staring there saying, yeah, well, we have to put together three good periods tomorrow and see what happens and go from there. And, it's like, uh-huh, exactly. Yep. And I didn't feel that vibe from the Predators. But again, I still have a hard time believing they're going to win tomorrow. So those are kind of the realities of the series. Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. We are to yours next. Plus, Andrew Burnett's a great coach. I like Andrew Burnett. I told Andrew Burnett after he got hired, I said, hey, man, I like you. I'm glad they hired you. You guys obviously know how I felt about the old coach. But if I don't like something, I'm going to say it. And Andrew Burnett was like, yeah, man, I understand it. You got, you know, whatever. Now there's something I don't like. And we'll get to that next, and then your phone. Stillman & Company, 1025-1063, the game. And we'll be giving away something later this hour. Ian, I'm not exactly sure what it is, but I'm sure you will tell me before I give it away. I think it's pretty good. So we will do that later this hour as well. Stillman & Company, 1025-1063, the game.
Fed to the side of the right circle. Back out for Hughes. Hughes for Miller. His shot to the side of the net. Shoveled over. And Saros tried to get there in time, but could not. So with the extra attacker, the Canucks cut the Predators' lead to one goal. Yossi tried to clear it. Quinn Hughes keeps it in, drops it back. Here is a shot stopped and a rebound try. Besser scores. Brock Besser picked up the rebound and has tied the game with 6.2 seconds left. Two extra attacker goals here by the Canucks. And a hat trick for Brock Besser.
The first one's kind of backdoor, right? He got a kind of empty net, and then second one, there was 6 seconds left, maybe. From my standpoint, I saw Miller coming down, and I just tried to go full block mode and not let him get it to net. I think it hits my stick, and then off juice pad, and I don't know. I would have to look at it, but probably things that we can correct and do better. It's too quick now to really assess what happened.
Well, it was a bounce here, and it was a net there, and it was a pass there, and it was off the stick there, and there is some truth to that. But there's one thing that I haven't talked a lot about so far in the show that I do want to get into today, which is the coaching. Because I am an Andrew Burnett fan, and I think Andrew Burnett is a great coach. But I am disappointed in what I've seen in this series because there are some management mistakes. You know, I was talking to a former NFL head coach over the weekend, And we were talking about how in baseball, the head coach is called a manager. And he said the way that coaching is nowadays, and we've talked about this with Belichick and Vrabel, and the idea of a just an authoritarian ruler doesn't work as far as coaching is concerned anymore, because society dictates that everybody wants to feel appreciated. So we all have to work together. And he says the coaches nowadays in the NFL are really more managers than they are anything else. And I think that, again, when you're on the bench in a Stanley Cup playoff game, you are managing the game. And I think his management in this series has been questionable. Now, I'm not he's not the reason that they're down 3-1, but he's on the list. And there are there's a handful of things in particular that I do not like. Number one, it's time for Tommy Novak to head to the press box. I wanted them to scratch Novak last night. I thought it was time to put Juuso Parsonen in there, who's got a big body and really hasn't played in the NHL in a while, but is a capable enough player. And when Parsonen is performing well, he's not a bad player. Tommy Novak can't play in this series. Quite frankly, I think I kind of regret that they gave him an extension to begin with. Because I remember when Elliott was going on the midday show before the deadline and was talking about how teams might be interested in giving up a first-round pick for Tommy Novak. And I was like, a first-round pick for Novak? And they gave Novak a modest contract at 3 years, $3 million. So if he sucks, it's not a big deal. Novak doesn't do anything in the playoffs. He's too small. He's too timid. He's too soft. And against Vancouver, with those big bodies and those big defensemen, he didn't do anything. And so when you decide you're not going to play Tommy Novak, what you end up doing is you basically end up not playing his entire line. And what does that mean? It means more time for the Scarbini line. It means more time for McCarron and Smith and Sherwood. And you don't win playoff series with those guys. So that's the first thing. And I'll be shocked. I mean shocked if Novak is in the lineup tomorrow night. That's the first thing that I find at least a little questionable. The second thing, and this is an Andrew Burnett problem, this would not necessarily be a head coach problem, although the head coach would certainly be a part of the discussion here, but this is specifically an Andrew Burnett problem because he is a power play savant. Power play sucks. This series, power play has sucked. I thought 0 for 15 against Dallas was bad in 2019, and this is up there. I believe, Ian, it's 1 for 14 right now.
I believe that is correct.
That's almost as bad as the 0 for 15. And that 0 for 15 against Dallas is kind of the initial cog that got Peter Laviolette fired. Now, I'm not saying Andrew Burnett should be fired. I'm not saying there should be any discussion about Andrew Burnett being fired. That's not what I'm saying. But Andrew Burnett is a power play guru, and the power play freaking sucks in this series. So that, to me, is on him. And then third, I know it's talking about what's on the list of the problems and not saying, you know, you are the problem. Because if Colton Sissons puts that empty netter in there, we're not talking about any of this. But the lineups that he played last night at 5-on-6, I'm still angry about. You know, I always talk about feeling players in the game. You know, sometimes guys are out there, and I'm like, is he on that team? Like, did he play last night? He's like, did he play last night? He had 19 minutes of ice time. I'm like, what? He played? The two guys I felt the most last night for the Predators were Anthony Beauvillier and Jason Zucker. Now, I think Jason Zucker is an example of what this team doesn't have, which is a group of veteran, legitimate NHL players. You know, I'm not talking about these Michael McCarrons that, you know, spend half their career in the AHL. I'm talking about guys that are 10, 12-year NHL players that are bona fide NHL dudes that could play for any team. Zucker is one of those guys. Zucker is big. Zucker matters in the offensive zone. Zucker can hold his own. Zucker can get in front of the net. Zucker can push people around. Zucker is a good, solid player. You don't have enough of that. You know, like, I look at Carrier and I'm like, is Carrier good? I don't know. And then Beauvillier, I mean, I thought when they traded for him, I looked at his stats and I'm like, I think this guy sucks. And then Barry came on the show after the deadline, and Barry was like, look, I coach Bevilier. I know Bevilier. He's going to fit right in. He's exactly what we need. He's a playoff player. Like, we need him. And I'm like, okay, I guess. I mean, you're winning all these games, so who am I to complain about it? And then Bevilier didn't do anything during the regular season. And then in the playoffs, Bevilier's been awesome. And last night, I mean, I thought he was their best forechecker. And so Vancouver goes 6-on-5, and you know they're coming. And those are big bodies, right? Besser, big body. Miller, big body. That's who they're putting on the ice. They're not putting Connor Garland and Lafferty out there on the ice. And he goes with Cole Smith, Gus Nyquist, Jankowski. And not to say that Nyquist is a Scarbini, but I just don't think that defensively he's the other guys. And of course, Nyquist fell down. And I'm sitting there thinking, I mean, I've watched Jason Zucker dictate this. And Zucker's been the best skater this team has this series. That he's not out on the ice in the most critical moments. Bevilier was the best forechecker last night. I think Bevilier, you know, he's like a defensive Arvidsson. You know, he's kind of small, but he's zipping around everywhere. Well, when Vancouver can move the puck as quickly as they do, and it's hard for you to get a stick on it, that's the guy you need out there, is the little bumblebee that can just get his stick on it and just break something up. Not big Cole Smith, who's trying to line up at left end and go rush the passer.
Okay, so let's see. The Besser, the first one that they scored, it was Lozon, Forsberg, O'Reilly, Carrier, and Saros, and Nyquist. So it was the top line, and it was the Lozon.
That was the second one, right?
That was the first Besser goal with 17:11 left in the game to get him within one.
You mean 17:11 gone in the period?
Correct.
So because Nyquist fell down on the second one.
So it was Nyquist, Jankowski, McDonough, Yossi, Saros, and O'Reilly for the tying goal on the ice.
Where's Bevilier? He didn't get in.
So, I mean, you had your top line out there, and you had Carrier and Lozon for the Besser to get him within one. And then you have your best line. I guess you had Jankowski out there for a face-off situation.
Which is another problem, by the way. It's not the coach's fault, but it is another problem.
Yeah, they have not
been awful on the dot.
They have not been good on. I don't know why O'Reilly kept getting kicked out of the faceoff dot yesterday, but he got kicked out constantly. And then in overtime, it was the top line, and it was Shen and McDonough.
So I don't have a problem with the lineup that he put out there in overtime. I mean, I think the Predators had just lost all faith by the time they got to overtime. But Zucker and Bevilier, those were the guys that I felt the most defensively, and he didn't put them on the ice in that three-minute period. And I'll say that I love this Zucker. I love him. I mean, I don't know if they're going to be any good next year. I don't know if there's any point to re-sign him, because we need to see whether or not Tomasino and, you know, Kimmel and Svechkov and those kind of guys are any good, and that may take away a spot if you re-sign Zucker. But I love Zucker, especially for a sixth-round pick. Woof. But I wanted both him and Bevilier on the ice last night, and I kept sitting there saying, where are they? Put Sissons out there. Obviously, Sissons hit the post, and Sissons is on the line with those guys. But, again, I'm not saying that Andrew Burnett is the reason why the Predators are going to lose this series, but he's on the list because I don't think his management's been up to par that I expect from him. All right, more of your phones. Plus, the biggest fan complaint of the weekend that I still just – I think it was overrated by the fans. You know, the organization won't say it, but I will. I think the fans made too big a deal of something that I didn't think was a big deal at all. We'll do that next. And your phones. Stillman & Company, 1025, 1063, the game.
We're pretty proud of how the whole sports world sees our experience in the game. Of course, everything starts at center ice out. Like, it just does. You know, fun team, great team, three very bizarre playoff games. You know, that should be enough. The one thing that we pride ourselves on is we try to get out of the way of the fans. You know, we want energy from Broadway to spill right through the building. That wasn't always the case. And, you know, over the past 15 years, I have the pleasure of being here. It's let's do some cool things. Let's do some fun things. Be candid with you. Game three, we tried a few new things because we listen to our fans. When they say, look, you can't run the same song again. You can't do that. Let's try something a little bit new, a little bit fresh. And we did. And to be candid with you, our pregame wasn't as good as it normally is. And, you know, it's great that, you know, I get a couple hundred mentions on Twitter about, you know, what a schmuck I am and how dumb you are, you're tone deaf. I love the fact that our fans, you know, tell us what they like and what they don't like. And I really mean that. I hate criticism, but you thrive on it. You know, so you hear it a little bit. And we have to make sure that we're doing the things that our fans want to see and do and hear. Sometimes we'll challenge it. But I don't mind failing. You know, we'll try some new things. And if we fail, we fail. And you kind of retool it. And, you know, tonight is going to be very different than it was Friday night. And game six, ideally, if we're playing one, will be different again, you know, for the better. So I like that our fans reach out.
That was Sean Henry last night on Stillman & Company before the game, before game four. So there was a lot of complaining. Ian, I don't know if you saw any of this, but there was a lot of complaining over the weekend after game three about the Predators game operations and the atmosphere and the building and everything else.
Okay.
And I said yesterday on our special Stillman & Company program, which hopefully there will be one on Sunday of next week ahead of game seven. I wouldn't cross my fingers on it, but we'll see. But I thought that it was a little overblown. You know, like Alex Darty did like a whole thread by thread, point by point, you know, kind of breakdown of his thoughts of it. And they're totally different than mine. And the Predators fans were just going crazy about, you know, they didn't play the Run This Town song and they didn't this and they didn't that and they didn't this. And I'm like, guys, the atmosphere is made up by the fans. It's not made up by the team's game ops. Atmosphere is made up by the fans. Now, I think the Predators had some good moments last night. You know, Lloyd Cushenberry snapping a catfish to Will Levis, I thought was absolutely hilarious when it happened. I saw Levis standing up there on the band stage, and there was some dude next to him. I'm like, who the hell is that next to Levis? I'm sure it's some dude on the Titans, but I don't know who it is. It ended up being Lloyd Cushenberry. And so I thought that kind of got the crowd fired up a little bit or whatever, but the atmosphere wasn't made last night because Will Levis kissed a catfish or Taylor Lewan chugged a beer or whatever. But the Preds Twitter felt night and day, in my opinion, different between the atmosphere from game three to game four. And as somebody who sat in the building for both game three and game four, I did not feel a difference. I felt like both nights the crowd was into it. The crowd was energized. The crowd was as anxious as I was. The crowd wanted to see the team win. I thought all those things were the case. And I think it's hard for a crowd to stay in it when you give up a goal on the first shot of the game Friday night and you don't score until 57 minutes in. But I don't think it had anything to do with the game ops crew, even if Sean Henry is coming on the show saying, yeah, you know, there were some things we did, we could have done better. I did not feel like there was any difference between Friday and Sunday. Sorry. I thought it was overblown, and I just thought that it was Preds fans looking to bitch. That's what I thought it was. And I just, again, call a spade around here. I just thought it was ridiculous, and I stand by that. Dave says, Andrew Burnett did not end up getting the full-time job in Florida because he completely mismanaged the lines in the playoffs and John Cooper ate his lunch in that playoff series a couple years ago. So I don't remember anything about that playoff series. I'll have to take your word for it. One texter says, the complaining from the fans about not playing Run This Town was absurd. Some fans are trying to recapture the magic of the 2017 run and it's just not possible to recreate that. Agreed. The fans had a different mentality prior to 2017. You know, the fans wanted the team to win, but I think they deep down inside never thought the team was going to win. Then the team won, and it was like, we expect this team to win. And it's just a different approach. It was a different atmosphere.
This series kind of feels like the Preds have almost reverted back to the first half of the season, and they're like finding ways to lose games, whether it's the goalies off a little bit one night, or special teams and power play is off one night, or they give up
12 seconds
some leads, like the Dallas thing where they give up a couple of leads late another night. You know, in the second half of the season when they started to really pour it on, that kind of stuff went away. But the first half of the season, it was inconsistent. In every game, they played okay, but it was a little back and forth, and they were finding ways to lose. And this series kind of feels like the first half of the season all over again. It's almost like the break after the regular season. They haven't been able to, like, get back to it.
So I wonder if Barry Trotz came on the show, and again, I'm paraphrasing, I'm not quoting, came on the show like 3 weeks ago. You know, when the Predators were playing Winnipeg, when they were 1 point shy of a playoff spot, and I asked about the fans, and I was expecting the answer to be, oh, we have the best fans, and we know with our fans we can beat anybody, and we love our fans, and they're the best fans, and, you know, the ass-kissing of the fans that every coach and general manager, that everybody does. And Barry didn't say that. Barry talked about how great the fans are, but basically had a message for the fans. And again, I'm paraphrasing, saying, you know, hey, stay behind the team. Don't get on them. You know, don't. This team, they can feel the pressure. I've been behind the bench, and I know that when the fans turn on the team, I know how it affects the team. So let's get behind the team, and let's cheer on the team. And, you know, nobody's going to be trying harder to win than the team. And we love our fans, but fans, we need you behind us. And it was almost like Barry was saying, fans, please do not get mad at the players. Now, Barry Trotz is not stupid. We all know that. Barry Trotz, this is not his first rodeo. And so I keep thinking about Barry Trotz saying that. Or, again, I'm paraphrasing, but that was the gist of it. And I keep thinking about that. And I'm like, was Barry Trotz doing that, begging the fans to stay behind the team no matter what, because maybe Barry Trotz feels like the team is soft? Like that the team is going to grip the sticks too tight? We all know there are certain dudes you have to motivate in order to get them to be successful. And then there are some people out there, especially in sports, that you have to say, hey, calm down, chill out. And maybe that's what this team is. And they grip the sticks too tight. And Barry knows it, which is why Barry went on that, you know, and Andrew Burnett, they went on that campaign of we've got nothing to lose. And then this team is out there playing like the Toronto Maple Leafs play, like they've got everything to lose. And so that's just my opinion on it. One texter says, Jared, do you think the crowd has changed over time after the Predators raised the ticket prices? The answer to that is no. I do not. Now, I don't know what the ticket prices for the playoffs were before, you know, 17. I mean, I was a ticket holder then, and I'm a ticket holder now, but I don't go year by year and look at it and say, oh, okay, it's this much, or oh, okay, it's that much, or whatever. But I don't think that it is changed so drastically. I thought about it when they raised the ticket prices for the 18 playoffs. They got crushed. And I said, look, it's not nationalpredators.gov or .org. They're not a nonprofit. It's nationalpredators.com. It's a business. But if you do this and you bring in a different crowd, and then you lose the people that have been there from the jump, that's you're going to be the ones that end up suffering for that. Not the fans, not the bandwagoners that are, well, I like it now, let me buy, but the people that may get priced out. But I don't think that the Predators have priced at this point, given the fact that I feel like it's kind of gone back a little bit to what it was before 17, not the, all the way back, but a little bit. I don't feel like there's a, like an, I don't feel like the people that are in the building are people that don't care. I feel like the people that are in the building are the people that love the team. I mean, I looked at the crowd last night and I'm like, I didn't see an empty seat, and that crowd went crazy, and that crowd wanted that team to win, and that crowd all felt the same way when that puck hit that post. I think there's still diehard fans that are in that building. So I don't think that that's the issue. One texter, Stephanie, says, and I think this is the best way to end this segment today, says one of the glaring reasons this team is nowhere close to 17 is that they don't have Pekka, and Saros is not Rene. I think deep down inside we thought this was Aaron Rodgers after Brett Favre, and it's not. Rene was a different caliber of goaltender when he was on than Saros has been in the playoffs. Now, Saros, when he's on in the regular season, he's great, but he's never been on in the playoffs. And after three tries, I think it's pretty obvious that might just be what he is. All right, the Titans draft. Mel Kiper Jr. does not like your draft. But I got some good news about Mel's grade. We'll get to that coming up next. I promised we'd be giving something away, so let's do it now. Be caller 5 at 615-737-1025, and you will see Stevie Nicks at Bridgestone Arena on Tuesday, May 14th. Good luck on that. Stillman & Company, 1025, 1063 The Game.